Hello and welcome to Inside Right. Today I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Ante Milicic. How are you, sir?
Thanks for the very kind introduction. I'm currently in Zagreb, Croatia. A little bit cold, but I'm doing well. And thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. When I got your contact, I thought I'd contact you straight away and see if you wanted to come on. And thank you very much for saying yes to that request.
Yeah, no, all good. And I love your passion towards the game and promoting it. So keep on, following your dream.
I will. I'll keep going. Let's get into today's episode. First of all, I want to talk about your love for football growing up. And then I want to talk a bit about your playing career. You've played in a couple of interesting countries. So I would like to talk about that. And then I want to talk about your coaching career, especially the 2015 Asian Cup Socceroos win. So that's how today's episode is going to go. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Away
All
we
right.
go.
First question: where did your love for football begin, and who introduced you to the beautiful game?
I think it was an interesting one because I was growing up in my area in Strathfield, Homebush area, playing school sport. I was probably as a 6-year-old more into the rugby, to be honest. It was more of
Okay.
Manly Warringah was my team, and I was a young kid. But at the school that I went to, at the time, they deemed it was a bit rough for that age group, which was understandable. So then I just started playing in the local club close to my home, basically, which was actually Strathfield.
Yep.
And then I guess my parents, especially probably my dad, was a big influence coming from Croatia. That Croatian migrant community in Sydney was fairly strong, and they loved their football. So, as I started getting a little bit older, and then on the weekends watching, it was back then Sydney Croatia, which is now Sydney United, their senior team on a Sunday. That was like a routine. And then, as I sort of went through my teenage years, that was my junior club, Sydney United. So playing there, just the friends, and you'd see a lot of these familiar faces, at the soccer or at church, or obviously at training or at picnics, as we used to do back then in the 80s and 90s. And so, as I said, very passionate community, loved their football, and it really just grew from there. And on top
Yeah,
of that,
well.
on top of that, of course, on the weekends, we didn't get too much footage, but there was always like the English games or an Italian wrap up. And then, obviously, Liverpool was my club, and
Yeah,
Maradona,
good.
Napoli was sort of my team. So it sort of stemmed from there, to be honest.
There you go. So, okay, out of those clubs, who do you support now?
Funny, now at my age now, I'm coming close to 50, and I've had my career as a player behind me and my coaching career. I watch teams more so that interest me there in terms of their playing style. So now I'll love watching the Italian league here in Europe. Obviously, the games are at a time slot where you can concentrate a lot more, and that helps. But I really like to watch Roma when Mourinho was there. I love watching Inter Milan play. Bologna this year is very, very interesting. I'll always watch Tottenham because of Ange.
Yep.
Like to watch Brighton play. I think in Croatia, I get a bit brainwashed with Luka Modric. So whenever there's a Real Madrid game, everyone, sort of whole
You
country,
gotta
talks
watch it.
about it. Yeah, so you've all
Yeah.
got to watch that. But I follow more teams. Yeah, of course, I like Liverpool and Napoli. And like last year, Napoli were excellent to watch. This year,
Yep.
a few things have sort of derailed for them. But I follow more coaches and playing styles that interest me. But the hardest thing for me is on a Tuesday and a Wednesday when there's Champions League nights and there's so many great games to choose from. That's sort of where I get in a little bit of trouble, to be honest.
Spoiled with choice.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
There you go. So growing up, you found football fell into your hands because you couldn't play rugby. Who was your footballing idols? Is there
Well,
one player that you loved?
look, Maradona was for sure, because I just felt he was obviously attacking players single-handedly for me, pretty much won a World Cup. So, Maradona was the one, and he had a couple of good foreigners with him as well at Napoli at that stage. But also, I think the big things were the World Cups as well. Watching the World Cups, I think 86 was Mexico, 90 was Italy. That's where the kind of nation sort of stops, when you watch those games and everyone talks about it. But also, as a young kid, Liverpool with Kenny Dalglish was a team that I
In rush.
Yeah, Ian Rush. They had a lot of John Barnes, a lot of good, skillful players that
Oh,
are
John
in
Barnes.
football. Yeah, so Liverpool was my team. So it was more along those lines.
Nice, interesting. Now, what age did you did, was there a time in your life, maybe early teens, where you thought, you know what, I'm gonna have a crack. I'm gonna try and become a professional footballer. Where was the turning point?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I remember that time, very, very vividly. So, going through those age groups, 14s, 15s, 16s, we used to have these state competitions. So it'd be New South Wales, Queensland, Victoria, all the states in Australia. There'd be a one-week tournament where everyone played each other. And then that's where you sort of tested yourself against the best players from your age groups in the other states. So, 14s and 15s I was playing, and then 16s. So when I was playing in the under 16 competition, with New South Wales, we would always, actually win it, to be honest. We'd always sort of be the strongest, with Victoria the second strongest. After that tournament in 1989, I received a phone call from Ron Smith, who was running the AIS program in Canberra, where I think at that time 18 players in the whole of Australia got offered full-time scholarships to study and learn football, really, and live in the facility there in Canberra and train daily. And also there was overseas tours, so I got asked to go there to AIS in Canberra. And then I think I was about 16 at the time, and then that's when it was clear in my mind that I think I'm going okay at this sport. I definitely love it, and I want to take it seriously. So it meant at the age of 16, leaving home, leaving your family, and then moving to Canberra for a full-time scholarship, which, looking back now, I must say played a huge part in my development.
Yeah, wow. Very interesting. So you're an attacker, right? You're a striker. Did you always want to play that position? Or was there other preferences?
Yeah, look, when I look back at my career now, and playing in different countries as well, like in Holland, they obviously saw me a lot as a left winger. They used to like me playing on the left wing, cutting in on my right foot. That was just the style of football that they felt would suit my individual strengths. In Croatia, I played a lot as a more as a second striker, as a number 10. It really depend where. Now when I've spent 14 years as a coach, you understand a lot more how coaches think. So it also depends what other players they have at their disposal as well. So they'll look at your qualities, where they're for you. But I mean, anywhere across that sort of front line,
Attacking line, yeah.
I think I was fairly comfortable in creating as well, not just scoring.
Yeah, very interesting. Let's talk about your time in the Netherlands, playing in the Eredivisie. You scored 10 goals in that competition. How different was it playing in Europe compared to playing in Australia?
Yeah, well, that was the biggest part for me to adapt to playing in Europe, was coming from Australia, where we'll train 3 times a week, to coming to Europe, where we would train 5 6 times a week, and then the Netherlands with the snow and the pitches and the intensity, that was a big jump for me. And I started off really well, and then I remember after about 6 months, I would start to get a lot of little muscle injuries because, plain and simple, I was 23 years old when I moved overseas to Holland. My body wasn't used to that level of training and intensity. So, it was a shame for me in terms of that. But I mean, I still look back at that experience, and I played a lot of games when I was fit. I'd either start or be coming off the bench. I scored a few goals there as well, played against some really good players in some beautiful stadiums in front of some big crowds. So it's all part of the footballing journey, isn't it?
There you go. Let's talk about Croatia now. Now, you might want to pronounce the club you played for in Croatia because I think I'm going to butcher
Yeah, it's called Rijeka, and it's a good club, solid first division club. I think at the moment they could be even currently first. They've got a good facilities. I remember when I left Holland to go there, we were in the UEFA Cup as well, and so that was more of a I've always. You know, it was a stage of my career where I always wanted to live in Croatia, and then through football, it gave me the opportunity, and I really enjoyed my couple of years there, and it's nice to look back on.
Well, that was my question, because you're half Croatian, was it a ambition to play over there? And you, yeah, there you go.
100% it was my vision, because Croatia sort of fascinated me as a country a lot, because as a kid, a lot of people left the former Yugoslavia to come to Australia, to all parts of the world for a better life. And then Croatia, with going through the war and then being recognized as its own country, it was in a development stage. But the football fascinated me because for such a small country in terms of size and population, the results that it gets, both collectively as a team, as individuals, I really wanted to experience that and just gain more knowledge. So, I mean, look, now I'm 50, and I'm in Croatia now. I live, and I still keep in touch with players that I played from, back then, and that was over 20 years ago. So it was a really, really good time in my life on and off the field.
Yeah, there you go. The next country I want to talk about, and I'm very interested in your answer here, Malaysia. I want to discuss this chapter of your footballing career. What was the Malaysian football landscape like when you arrived?
Because Malaysia came at a time where the NSL just stopped, and they were looking at starting the A-League, but there was a gap of about 15 months, a year and a half. So that last year in the NSL, I think I was a top goal scorer, player of the year, had a really good year. And then I had an offer to go to Malaysia at Pahang, was the club. And I had a great time there because we won the championship, so I've got good memories of the time there. But it was a time where they had three foreigners could only play in each team. So obviously big expectation, a lot of responsibility. The team lent on you a lot, so again, I like that kind of pressure. The crowds were excellent. The level was quite technical as well, but again, completely different coming from Australia with the way that we play the game. But again, it's all about going away from home, getting out of your comfort zone, respecting and learning new cultures. And to this day, again, I keep in touch with people from Malaysia from my time there, and I dare say that I'd one day even lo love to go and coach there for a season. That's sort of the good impact that it made on me.
Yeah, let's talk about Sydney United. Obviously, they had a big impact on you and who you are as a person today. How was it playing for them, representing Sydney United?
Well, as a kid, I think I touched on it earlier. That was the club where I spent my childhood. So that's where I
Yeah.
spent my weekends. That's where I met my friends. That was the club that I had my first ambition that I wanted to play first grade for.
It
From there,
sparked something. Yeah.
it had that extra meaning. And then in the end, I played for the club. I captained the club. I coached the club. I got sold overseas from Sydney United. So it meant everything to me. And it's had a great history, that club, of producing a lot of players. And then, like I said, you look back at it and you're thankful for your time that you had there. I wouldn't have wanted it to pan out any other way, to be honest.
That's awesome. If you could describe Sydney United and what it means to you in one word, what would it be?
Everything.
Everything. Yeah, fantastic. I want to move on to your coaching career now. So you've stopped playing. Why did you want to become a coach? What was the drive there? Did you miss the game? Why did you want to become a coach?
It was actually interesting. Because when I started getting towards the end of my career, I actually was doing a fitness course. I was studying fitness, and then at the time I was at Brisbane Roar, and Stuart McLaren was going to Canberra to go do, I think it was the C license, and it was like a 3-week course in Canberra in June. And I go, "Mate, you're crazy," and he
Yeah.
kept on bugging me to come. And then I think it was like $3,000 at the time, and then PFA threw in $1,000 and said, "Look, we'll help these footballers out in terms of development." And then I thought, I'll go. And then there was quite a good list of people that were going to it. So I said, I want to go see this type of the game, that side of it. So I ended up going with him. And then even when I went to the course, I wasn't like, "Oh, this is 100%, this is what I want to do." I liked, looking at the theory part of it and the practical, but it wasn't like, okay, I'm ready to stop playing, and I'm ready to dive into this. And then it kind of sort of fell in my lap, because towards the end of my career, I went to Malaysia, where I actually signed a 2-year deal. I was about 33 at the time, and after the first year in Malaysia, there was a big problem with match fixing
Oh,
in the
okay.
country. So what happened
Wow.
was, yeah. So after my first season in Malaysia, and I think that was 2008, their footballing bodies said, "No more foreigners the following year." So then,
Oh.
the club that I was at, they said to me, "Well, you can stay and be an assistant coach if you want, but in the meantime, Sydney United rang me and offered me the position of head coach in the NPL." So I basically picked up, went back to Sydney United. They gave me an opportunity, and they said, "Yeah, just do your best." And then when I went there, I think that was the difference for me, because it was Sydney United as my first coaching job, and it was the club that I respected and loved. I wanted to do so well, and so that's when I really went in it with everything. And so that was
Yeah,
probably,
wow. Awesome.
yeah, the first way that I got addicted to it.
There you go. Now I want to talk about the Socceroos. I'm very excited about this next part. You were the assistant manager to the current Tottenham Hotspur boss, Ange Postecoglou. While being a part of the Socceroos coaching team, first of all, Ante, what is Ange like as a person?
You've got to get to know him first,
Got to get to know him.
yeah, you've got to get to know him. Look, he's the type that as a coach, he'll give you an opportunity, and then it's up to you to
Fulfill that.
fulfill that. And I was fortunate that probably when you work with the Socceroos, that's 4 years. There's lot of travel, World Cups, Asian Cups, Confederation Cups, away games. So there's times away from the football that you get to know him as a person as well. So it's a friendship now that there's a lot of respect there, and I'm very fortunate that when I went on my coaching journey that I had an opportunity to become an assistant to Ange, because first and foremost, it's easy to say what a good coach he is, but he's an exceptional human being. He's a great person, and I'll keep saying he's a very, very intelligent man as well. So this the way he's playing and his career's gone, it comes as no surprise to me.
Yeah, there you go. At the 2015 Asian Cup, where we won the tournament, what was the vibe like around the squad going into the tournament?
The vibe was good and positive, and the reason for that is because when Ange first got the job, he planned all his training games for that Asian Cup to win. So when I say that, I'm saying 6 months before, the squad that he selected and gained experience at the 2014 Brazil World Cup, that's the stepping stone for your Asian Cup success. Then the games that we played in the September, October, November windows in 2014, that's preparation for the Asian Cup. So he planned that to every detail on and off the field. So it's very clear what he wanted and the expectations from players and staff.
Interesting.
So inside of that, the people that were living it and that were in it every day saw that, we're a very good chance to do well in this competition, and it turned out, fabulously.
There you go. Let's talk about the final. So I've got a bit of a run through of the final for everyone listening. In the final, we versus South Korea. I was at that game, by the way. Just before halftime, Massimo Luongo scored a wonderful goal from outside the box, which gave us a 1-0 lead at the break. Then Son scored in stoppage time to equalize the match, taking us to extra time. Now, in extra time, you all huddle and you have a bit of a talk before the play starts again. What did you and Ange say to the boys going into the extra time?
To be honest, look, Ange is the one that speaks to the players, and as an assistant coach, there might be a few little things that you might say to an individual or two, but the focus clearly was on Ange, and his instructions at the time, then they're not only tactical words of advice, and also understand the little bit extra that you need to speak with his substitutes, but also mentally, he's excellent motivator. He's very good with words, and it was along the lines of this is the path that the game's taken. We're prepared for this. It's just going to make it more sweeter for us when we do win the tournament. And of course, in the end, you saw two substitutions by memory. I think Troisi and Juric combined for the goal. So he had complete buy-in from all the players and staff. And as I said, the confidence came from the preparation. So people knew inside the group that even though they equalized towards the end, South Korea, that there was no need to panic, because we never let the scoreboard influence the football. So keep playing the way that we train, and that gives us our best chance of success, and that's how it turned out.
There you go, James Troisi scored the winner. What was that feeling like at full time?
It's indescribable, because okay, it's a part of history as well, and you love seeing the players, the staff, the supporters, the Australian footballing public, in such happiness. But I'll look at it as a staff member, the amount of work and time that got put into
Everyone puts
the
in.
tournament. Yeah, I mean, even if you just speak on the tournament yourself, you're away for 36 days. Traveling, training, meetings, reviews. There's just you don't have a minute to yourself, really, to be perfectly honest. So it paid off, and then you're satisfied that you've received this award for all the hard work and that you've put in. So it's a great feeling to win an Asian Cup at home in Sydney. And it's a memory that stays with you forever.
There you go. That's fantastic. Just a couple of quick fire questions to finish off. Okay. If you couldn't play football and you had to be a professional at another sport, what would you pick?
Tennis.
Tennis. Why is that?
Because when I was a kid, my parents were both working. And a lot of times they couldn't pick me up after school, so I used to go to a tennis school just to sort of
Really?
kill time, yeah, till about 6 o'clock. And I actually became really good at it. And then I started going to tournaments and everything. And then at 12 years old, my tennis coach sort of said, "Mate, well, you're going to make a decision. It's going to be tennis or as they call it, soccer." So I went for football because I enjoyed the team part of the sport, whereas tennis was very, very individual at times, even lonely, and there was just so much non-stop individual concentration that I just at that age at 12 I prefer to be in a team setting, and I went with football, but I loved my tennis as a kid.
Fun fact for everyone listening. Okay, one more question to wrap up today's episode. What does football mean to you?
It's been part of my whole life, so as we sort of touched on earlier in the show, from 6 years old to a kid to playing to coaching, it's been a profession for me. I'm very blessed that I've had that opportunity to, as I say, meet a lot of good people along the way. It's a fantastic journey, see the world, see some incredible stadiums and games. So just thankful for everything that the game's given me. And like I said, it's like your family. It's just what you've known and what you've loved. And as I said, it's still an obsession. It doesn't go away. So
You live and breathe it.
you do, yeah. You don't really ever say goodbye to it, do you?
Yeah, you don't. You certainly don't. Thank you so much, Ante Milicic, for joining me on Inside Right today. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on.
My pleasure, and all the best moving forward. Thanks for having me.